Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
So you're just going to have to trust me on this one. I don't have a great record or track record, certainly on this podcast, about movie reviews. I'm not a movie reviewer. I know what I like. I know what I don't like. I can't tell you about the tremendous writing or script or cinematography or things like that. All I know is when I go to the movies, I either really like it or I go, well, that was kind of a waste of time. There isn't much in the middle for me. I was really excited. A few weeks ago, we saw our first movie in years. We went and saw that Nicolas Cage movie and I had high expectations for it. It was good. It was a fine movie, but I left disappointed because I really thought it was going to be funnier and better than it was. So you know where this is going. Top Gun, I've been talking about for a few weeks now. My wife is the biggest Top Gun fan in the world. It is crazy to watch her and her mom go to the movie theater and pose for pictures in front of the Top Gun Maverick. It's not even a poster. It's a giant cutout in the theater. Tom Cruise is like 8 feet tall, which he's not 8 feet tall. And there's planes and people are standing there taking pictures. It is a cultural phenomenon that people have been waiting close to 40 years for a remake on this thing, for a part two. We make fun of sequels. We make fun of comic book movies where there's been 13 Spider-Mans or whatever they are. Certainly I do. And they wear off. And then you hear about one and they're like, oh, this one's really better than the others. And then I'll go see that one. I forget the name of the Batman movie that was really exceptional. The guy that OD'd on drugs that played the Joker. That one was great. That was a great movie. And I think they won a bunch of Oscars and whatnot. Again, I told you I'm not a movie reviewer. But you hear the buzz on some movies and go, well, I've got to go see this. This is that movie. This is the perfect Memorial Day weekend movie for very many reasons why this is the perfect movie. I know it was not slated to come out this weekend. It was scheduled to come out a year and a half ago. Because of the pandemic, it did not. This movie is everything people my age, perhaps your age, love in movies. There is Americana. There is older music that you will love. Excellent music that you will love. There's a couple of newer songs in there I think the young people will love that were sounded fairly mainstream, that fit right in. I can't tell you I knew what the songs were, the music was, but I liked it. They found a way to strike a chord between somebody who's maybe 10 years old, 12 years old to go to a movie, and somebody who's 92 years old. I could take my mom to this movie. Now, it may overwhelm her sensory a little bit. We went to the IMAX theater. It was very loud. It was at times, the fight sequences can be dizzying. I mean, it is an amazing visual spectacle. You will laugh at this movie. You will at least get a small tear in your eye, if not flat out cry at this movie. And you will cheer at this movie. And I just offer up this question. Do you know another movie where you do that? I know a lot of movies where you do two. I don't know a lot of movies where you do three. I really don't. I think back to like the original Indiana Jones. You laughed and you cheered. I don't remember crying watching that film. Same thing with your Jurassic Parks, with Jaws, you know, all your big summer blockbusters, Star Wars, all these movies. Think about a film where you may actually cry, laugh, and cheer. It's really hard to do. It's hard to strike that balance. This movie will do that for you. It is the perfect Memorial Day weekend movie because, and they didn't plan it this way. I think when they knew it was delayed, they said, look, Memorial Day is where this movie belongs. Jurassic World's coming out in a couple, 3 weeks. It's supposed to be every bit the blockbuster that Top Gun Maverick is. But they weren't even going to try to go up against Top Gun Maverick on Memorial Day weekend. They said, nope, Top Gun Maverick is it. There is a memorial scene in the movie at a cemetery with a flyover. That's all I can tell you. That if you... I'm getting goosebumps now. If you go watch this movie and you see them fold that flag and you watch those planes fly over that cemetery by the ocean and you don't well up and you don't get goosebumps, well, you're probably not like me or you because you're listening to this podcast. And we're not some minority. We're not the exception. We're the rule. The whole theater was this way. It was unbelievable. People want to go to the movies and be entertained. They want to escape. Tom Cruise is a giant movie star. The best part of this movie is he was not Tom Cruise. In this film, he's Maverick. And you completely buy into it. And he plays this deep character that he did not play in the original film. This complex man who's now in his 50s, early 60s. It's different. There's an entire cast of young pilots in the movie. Most of them you've never heard of, the actors. It's pretty clear to me what Paramount is going to do. They will franchise this thing off beyond Tom Cruise. That's where this is headed. They will take something brilliant, and this will be remembered as the best Top Gun movie. It won't be the original. It won't be the original. The original will be viewed through a lens of, through a lot of people that, wow, that was cheesy, syrupy, love story-ish. Great movie. I've got nothing bad to say about Top Gun other than it was more of a chick flick than this one. That's no offense to ladies. It was more of a chick flick than this one. This one has that element. It has it. My wife, she wanted to go see it again maybe tonight. I mean, she wants to go see it fast. She cannot wait until we have it at home. She says, you know, we're going to watch that 7 nights in a row in our man cave in our basement. We got the big, you know, 90-inch TV from B-Stock, and we have a Sonos sound system down there, and it's pretty kick-ass. We're very happy to have it. We have not used it much. She doesn't watch movies very often. She falls asleep during movies. She doesn't like me to listen loud and watch loud. We have people over for the Chiefs game. The TV's great. The sound system's great. We have the sound up. That's basically what it's for. But I'm 25 feet away from it right here where I broadcast every day. And we have not sat down there and cranked it up and watched a movie. It's just not what she does. She can't wait. She says, we're going to get that movie. We're going to get that movie in the house. We're going to watch it every night for 7 nights. I said, okay. I have no problem with that. Now, I don't like watching movies over and over and over. I will want to see this one again. We all have, what, 10, 15 movies that we've seen that if you're flipping around on satellite or cable or wherever you are, and it's on, and it's one of your favorite movies, you stop and you watch it. For her, it's, I don't know, Dirty Dancing, maybe Footloose, the one where Sandra Bullock is the lady that goes to Alaska. The Proposal, the rom-com. We'll watch some of the, she liked a couple of Wedding Crashers, things like that. But the ones that I really loved, she doesn't care. Raiders of the Lost Ark comes on. She's like, snooze. Caddyshack's on, doesn't care. And she loves golf. So it can be very individual. This movie is for everyone. It is absolutely for everyone. I have only one complaint about Top Gun Maverick. It is purely a reflection of the times we live in and how much money they spent. They spent over $200 million, I think, to make this movie. It will break a billion. It's worldwide, it's just going to be a phenomenon. It is the best exportation of American greatness that Hollywood could possibly send to every other country on earth. It is impossible. While Biden is screwing everything up, this movie that was made during the Trump presidency, Jessica's been looking up all the facts. They had to pay $11,000 an hour to use these airplanes. The Navy charged them $11,000 an hour to use these planes. They would not let Tom Cruise touch the controls. He tried. He's a pilot. He does fly in the movie. He does actually fly in the movie in a different plane with Jennifer Connelly, who's an actress that is with him. There's shots. Then they're flying in an airplane together. He's flying it. She's in it. It's not some fake studio thing. They're in the air. They have another plane flying along with them. Like, the guy really flies. He flew a helicopter the premiere of the movie. He does stunts. He's crazy. Whatever. They spent all this money to make this movie, and the Pentagon had approval of the script. And the only disappointment, the only single solitary disappointment of the Pentagon under Trump approving this script is they never name the enemy. It looks to me like it's Russia. It looks like they're launching from a ship near Alaska. The enemies in their airplanes look like Darth Vader. They've got black helmets, black shields. You can't see if they're white or Muslim, Asian. You can't tell where they're from. You don't see their faces ever at any point. They've taken that completely out. So it's a generic enemy in Top Gun. Now, anyone who watches it that kind of understands the world will believe this is Russia, and it would have been great if it were Russia with what we have right now, because the whole world hates Russia. It would have been phenomenal if they had a couple of scenes that when this war started 2 months ago, they could have gone back and edited something in that said it was the Russians. That would have been good. It would have been good for business. It would have been good for planet Earth, to be honest. They didn't do it. It is believed originally that the enemy was China or some sort of a base in China, possibly Korea, something. I don't want to give away the plot of the target of what they have to destroy and what they have to do on this mission that they go on. But it was believed that China didn't like the original script. And the Paramount took it out and said, well, we'll make it generic. We'll do whatever. This is common in Hollywood. It goes way back. I don't really have the problem with that. I understand China's a big market. Look, if the Chinese see this movie, it's good for America. That's all I can tell you. If anybody around the world watches this movie, it is great for America. It can't be anything other than that. And they have clearly set up a cast of young characters in their 20s that are Top Gun pilots that become heroes, obviously, in this movie. And they're setting up for the next generation to franchise this movie, where maybe Tom Cruise does a cameo or something like that, but doesn't fly, or, you know, they're making gigantic superstars out of the young actors that are the young pilots in this movie. And I think Paramount's going to go full bore. I don't know why they wouldn't. I don't know why they wouldn't franchise it. People love, you know, we see all the same action over and over and over in movies. We see car chases, we see explosions, you know, we see, you know, hijackings, kidnappings. We see this over and over and over. There just isn't much simulating aviation. And, you know, Jessica doesn't like flying all that much. She's not afraid to fly. When we hit bumps, she gets scared. And I say, you just don't know how safe this is. I mean, so there would have to be a complete failure on this airplane or catastrophe for this thing not to land safely. We're going to be fine, no matter what. But she loves aviation. She loves watching these planes. She loved being in the cockpit in the IMAX theater, you know, dodging and ducking. And it was just an amazing experience. Run, see this movie. Hopefully you can do what I do or what I did and was able to just, I mentioned my in-laws were there. They sat a couple rows behind us. They have reserved seating now. And so it's hard to find four together. And we had two on the end and then they were two rows behind us. Afterwards, I said to my father-in-law, who's a great American, I said, you know, the only issue I have is they never named the enemy. And he's like, wow, you're right. And it's stuff that I notice. You can't, I just don't know how you can be, you know, a flag waver in this country, somebody who really loves America and loves our military, and not notice that they just went out of their way to not really name the enemy. The enemy's bad. They're up to no good. But a lot of the great movies throughout Hollywood history have a face for the enemy, an actor who's the person that you're really trying to get, or is, you know, a Putin in this movie would have been fantastic. You add Putin into this and you're trying to go to Russia and take something out and there's a Putin figure in this movie, would have been great. I'm 1 to 10, 9.5 stars. It's one of the top 10 movies I've ever seen. It's watchable over and over and over again. Tom Cruise is maybe the greatest Hollywood star, or the last great Hollywood star. He doesn't do anything small. He does it big and bold. He is unafraid of cliches in movies. A lot of times if you put them in, they're too corny, they're too cheesy. I thought there were a couple in the original that way, but he was not at a point in his career then when he was in complete control of everything. They're done now. The cliches, the couple of cliches in this movie, you just buy it. You just buy it because it's a Tom Cruise movie. You just buy it. I loved it, and you're going to love it, and I suspect you're going to go see it. And there are three different types of theaters you can see it in. You can see it in the regular theater, a Dolby theater, an IMAX theater. We chose the IMAX. If you don't want it quite as loud, maybe the regular theater. Some people don't like, you know, too much stimulation. We went full bore, and it was something else. So go check it out this weekend, the perfect Memorial Day weekend movie. KKHI is brought to you by CrossKitchensKC.com, online at CrossKitchensKC.com. Family-owned and operated in Belton. Have that discussion this weekend. Should we remodel the kitchen? Should we do this? Interest rates are up. You're probably not looking for a mortgage in a new home. They're trying to slow housing. People are going to stay put the next few years. Even if it just is for a 3 to 5 year period that you stay in your home now, you get to enjoy your great kitchen and you add value to the price of your home if and when you go to sell it in a short period of time. Tim will walk you all the way through it. They have a design team that can help you pick everything out if you're worried about the right countertops, the right tile, the right choices. They'll give you a full 3D rendering. And when you call Tim, you're dealing with the owner. Just doesn't get any better than that. His craftsmen have been with them for years. When he first started his company years ago, he didn't pay himself. Wasn't going great in the beginning. He paid his people first, and they stayed with him. He bit the bullet. Now he's doing well. And I think he's the premier kitchen remodeler in Kansas City. There are much bigger companies. There are much bigger companies where you'll never meet the guy that's on the TV commercial. You'll never speak with him. You'll never know him. You can't call him. If you have a problem, you ain't calling him, the guy on the TV commercial. You're not. You are not. You're going to get a project manager who's going to try to handle it. If you're lucky, you'll get to somebody in management. Doubtful. There are some really big corporate companies that will take 3 months of your time to do your kitchen. Or you can call Tim and his team will come. Tim and his team will come to your house, likely do your kitchen in 2 weeks or less, and that's the only job they're working on. And they will get it done, and they will look you in the eye and say, are you happy? And you'll say yes, and they'll be on their way. CrossKitchensKC.com. So many of our sponsors are that way. Unbelievable customer service at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. If you're in the new car market or pre-owned market, why don't you visit their showroom, even if it's a little bit of a drive for you. Go to Excelsior Springs this holiday weekend and sit down with them and say, let's build it. I'm looking for a GMC Sierra. I want 0% financing. I want to pay less than sticker. I want all the discounts. Let's order it from the factory in the exact color and trim that I like. Let's do it. They'll have it done in just minutes, and they will keep you up to date on the product. I got an email of my production date. They're like, production is starting on your Blazer. A few days later, it says production has ended on your Blazer. Then it said it's shipping. It's on a freight train. They let you know the whole way. It's really cool. RobertsRobinson.com and GMC. We are professional grade. And Finch Knife Company online at FinchKnifeCo.com. There are 3 retail locations around Kansas City and more on the way. If you'd like to be a retailer for Finch Knife Company, get a hold of them. Go to the website and say, I want your pocket knives in my store. And Kevin will mention me on the podcast that these knives are in my store. FinchKnifeCo.com is the way to reach them. Keep life from getting dull. Visit the Bullet Hole and Mission Shields in Overland Park, Teague Tractor in Belton, and pick up a brand new 1934 series Finch pocket knife, an homage to the great Smoky Mountain National Park in big, beautiful United States of America. All right, on to sports here. The Royals beat the Twins. I was asking the question, when will the Royals win again? Well, we know they beat the Twins on Thursday night, and we're shocked by this. They were hapless all night, down 2-0. Well, they pitched well, I guess. Down 2-0, Merrifield gets a 2-out, bases-loaded hit in the 8th inning, and the Royals tie the game. Bobby Witt Jr. comes up, gets a base hit, knocks in a run. The Royals go up 3-2. Then the Royals, so desperate for a win. This is what bad teams have to do, and I'm sorry to find the negative in something good in the Royals winning, but this is dreadful. The Royals are so bad, and the bullpen is so untrustworthy at this point, and they needed to win so badly that they brought Barlow in to pitch the 8th and 9th. That's a 2-inning save. So he's not available tonight. They just said, hey, we have to win a game. We have to find a way to win a game, and they did, and Barlow wasn't perfect. But they found a way to win a game, and that just takes so much of the heat off. And so we will tip our cap to the Royals for getting a win. But I will really tip my cap to a man named Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is quoted this week in response to George Kittle, who's a tight end for the 49ers, saying Travis Kelce is the most, basically said he's the most underpaid player in the NFL. Travis Kelce is the second highest paid tight end. He makes $14.5 million a year. But Kittle was pointing out that Kelce, the last 6 years, has more receiving yards than any wide receiver because he doesn't miss games. He's a constant. he's always 1,000-plus yards, that he's the best guarantee in football, that he's more valuable than, say, Tyreek Hill, who sometimes gets hurt, who sometimes has 2 catches for 17 yards. We know the greatness of Tyreek Hill, not arguing that, and I'm not begrudging in any way Tyreek Hill's contract. But the Chiefs offered Tyreek Hill 50% more than they pay Travis Kelce. And the Dolphins offered him double what the Chiefs pay Kelce. So Kittle makes a point. Tight end has a stigma attached. For many years, as I hosted a radio show that you may have heard of in Kansas City, I said, you don't want your best player to be your tight end. At one point, the Chiefs' best players were their tight end and their punter. I said, no, it's not good when, relative to the other 32 teams, you maybe have the best tight end and the best punter in football. No, what you want is the best quarterback. Of course, the Chiefs never had that until Patrick Mahomes, and that takes care of that. But Travis Kelce's been the best tight end, so he's paid like the best tight end. I understand it. I get it. But this guy's also been a game breaker. He had the big touchdown in the playoffs where he broke free and, I mean, just went wild. Kelce answers in response to questions about what George Kittle said. He says, that's my boy. I love that guy. He says, we're buddies. He's great. He's the best. All kinds of kudos and compliments to George Kittle. And I said, well, yeah, but what about he said about the contract? And Travis Kelce said something you never hear. I think Travis Kelce's a conservative. I know Patrick Mahomes is. I think that's why they're friends. I think they see the world the same way. I think Travis Kelce is happy with what he has. But I think Travis Kelce is an exceptional American that goes to work every day trying to be an exceptional American. Travis Kelce said in response to his contract, which is big, and has him signed for through 25. He's here for a long time. Travis Kelce is basically signed for life. Do they tear it up and give him more at some point? They may. They may. He said, quote, I signed my contract, unquote. Said he knew what he was getting into. He liked it when he signed it. He's not going to complain about what he signed. And he understands people out here that nobody's going to complain about $14.5 million a year. Then he went on to say, quote, I'm here for the legacy, unquote. Not for the biggest contract in football, which is a direct shot at Tyreek Hill. Oh, it was. It was. And I love it. I want Kelce to speak up on that. I want Mahomes to speak up on that. I want that to be a theme in this locker room with this football team, that they are here for the legacy, not the contracts. If you have players that buy into that, you have something. Because they've had a real window of opportunity here, and to be honest, haven't done much with it. 4 consecutive AFC championship games at home, and you won 1 Super Bowl, that isn't great. That's not great. You made it to 2-1-1. That's not great, folks. You're 2-2 at home in the AFC title game. And then you're 1-1 in the next round. That is not great. That is not a dynasty. That's not a legacy. People will remember you. They'll remember you won a Super Bowl. Like we remember Russell Wilson won one. We remember people that won Super Bowls. We do. But will they remember you as something better than that? A second Super Bowl would do that. And that's what Kelce's saying here. He didn't mention Tyreek Hill by name. And he was not asked about Tyreek Hill. But man, oh man, that's exactly what it sounded like. The dentist to the Chiefs is Dr. Bill Bush at NKC Dental, nkcdental.com. All you got to do is log on to get your appointment. He's there at every Chiefs game. Somebody loses a tooth, he's on it. Dr. Bush is amazing. 816-471-2911. You will not find a better dentist anywhere in the Midwest than Dr. Bill Bush at nkcdental.com. The Bluemont Hotel and Goolsby's Restaurant and Indoor Entertainment Center in Manhattan, USA. Travel on business to Manhattan, or do you have a baseball, softball, soccer tournament this summer? Stay at the Bluemont Hotel. Your kids are going to like it. It's fun. They have extra large suites for large groups like ball teams. Or if you stay there on business, man, they treat you like royalty. It's a custom hotel. It's locally owned and operated. It's a great place. They'll remember your name if you're a frequent guest. They have live music every week. And of course, Goolsby's is right there. Indoor entertainment, great restaurant, 30 taps on the wall. If you live in Manhattan, Salina, Junction City, make a night out, head over to Goolsby's, have some dinner, a little fun, and pour your own beer right off the wall. 30 taps right on the wall, and you pour your own. Goolsby's Restaurant and Indoor Entertainment Center. And my guy Chris at B-Stock has Asus laptops this Memorial Day weekend, half price. So that's all I can tell you. Bstock.net or go visit them at 14680 South Flaming Road. The brand new Asus inbox sealed Windows 10 professional operating system, $739. That's about half price. Go jump on it. All right, details continue to unfold about what's going on in Uvalde, Texas, and I'm not going to get in today. I'm ready for the Memorial Day weekend. I'm not getting into slamming police or the response. Every day the story changes. There's going to be an update on Friday afternoon. We don't know what happened yet. There are no conclusions to be drawn about who failed and who was a hero. We can't do that yet. What I know to be fact is the shooter was barricaded in a room, which somehow kept him from walking around the school and shooting all kinds of other students. How that took place, whether there were, apparently there was a lot of talking going on, maybe a couple of cops outside the door, but the SWAT team hadn't arrived yet or the tactical unit hadn't arrived yet and stormed in. I don't know. I don't care at this point. That stuff doesn't, I'm going to wait in the end before we get critical. Every one of these things you can learn from. This was a small town that did not have the resources of even like Kansas City, Missouri. You do this at a Kansas City, Missouri school, you probably have a SWAT team within 5 minutes. They did not. They just didn't have that. Closest tactical unit was a border patrol station, which is set up outside of town. This is close to the Mexican border. So I'm going to give you a couple little stories that I've read adjacent to this tragedy that'll give you an idea, paint a picture of what Uvalde, Texas is like. The reason I do this is media, let's take CNN, for example. They're in Atlanta, Georgia. They're going to compare this to what happens if a school across the street from CNN Center has this problem. You can't make that comparison. They're 85 miles west of San Antonio. They're 75 miles from the Mexican border. We know what the largest crimes are. Human smuggling and drug smuggling and illegal people. Dangerous illegal people. So here's the first story. October 21st of last year, 2021, the superintendent held a news conference and said Uvalde schools, there's 7 schools in total in this town. Uvalde schools, by October 21st, this would have been the last week of August, September, and most of October, in 2 months' time, they already had 48 lockdown drills at their 7 schools that were real. These kids that live there had been locked down. I've been asking myself, how did these kids know so well what to do? We know they have some training and a drill every now and then. I'm not talking about drills. 48 lockdowns at 7 schools over 2 months of this year. Why do you think they locked the schools down 48 times in Uvalde, Texas over 2 months? Every single one of them was border related. The Border Patrol and local authorities were in pursuit of human smugglers and drug traffickers. When this occurs near Uvalde, they close the schools down. They lock them down. The kids go on lockdown. School's over. We're locked down. There's a threat. There's an imminent threat. Are you kidding me? Can we discuss this topic a little bit nationwide? That growing up in a town of 15,000, 70 miles from the Mexican border, my kid's in school, and we're going to be locked down over and over and over because of human smuggling and drug trafficking and a high-speed pursuit or a pursuit of somebody. Somebody's on the lam. We're trying to find them. We're trying to apprehend them. And because we're trying to find somebody with a drug cartel or a human smuggler, the schools have to be locked down. Because where would one of these people go? They'd go into school and take hostages. I think people jumping to conclusions, criticizing the response, I think it's abhorrent. I think it's terrible. I just think it's just ridiculous and awful. We don't know. As I said on Thursday's podcast, I am more than willing to be critical of the response somewhere down the road and learn from it and say we have to do better than that. I'm more than willing to be critical that we didn't have enough resources in a place like Uvalde, that we should have seen there were 48 lockdowns, that there's trouble in and around Uvalde, that it's a dangerous place, and there should have been more, there should be a SWAT unit there, or a barrier, or a shield that they could go in with, that maybe they were missing equipment. There's a lot of things I'm willing to be critical of, but not yet. Not yet, because we just don't know all the facts. And a bunch of emotional, mourning parents, I can't, they have the right to speech. I'm not going to criticize them. I cannot let them decide for me whether the authorities did okay or not. I need to wait. I need more time. I need much more time on this. Another indication of what it's like in Uvalde, Texas, was the Border Patrol agent that stormed into the place off duty. He was getting his hair cut. He was off duty. He was not working. He gets a haircut, and he gets a text from his wife and from his daughter that there's a shooter in the school. I forget which room is. I think the daughter was in locked in a bathroom, and the wife was in her classroom teaching, locked down. What does this Border Patrol off-duty agent do at his barbershop? He says, hey, can I borrow your shotgun? He borrows his barber's shotgun and goes into the school. Unbelievable. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait and hear how this all plays out, because I don't know. We know some parents went in. We know some people went in, and I may have been one of them. I can't say I would or wouldn't. If I were standing there and I knew my kid was inside, that shooter was there, and I knew exactly where the classroom was, and the authorities thought, well, okay, he's over here on the east side or the west side of the building, and my kid is in a classroom on the east side, I may have just gone in and tried to do it too. I don't know how you stop parents from going in. Now, at that point, the building was said to be locked. So you're going to have to tap on a window. Somebody's going to have to let you in somehow. And they were funneling some kids out of windows. So it's hard to know exactly what happened, but we know this. There's a lot of sick teenagers in need, and we got to get help to them. We just have to find a way to help them. 360 Document Solutions can help your business in Western Missouri or anywhere in the state of Kansas. Log on to 360documentsolutions.com. And Fry Orthodontics says summer is the best time for your teenager to get the perfect smile for life. Log on to fryorthodontics.com or call 469-9191 and schedule your first free appointment to get your kids with braces or Invisalign this summer. $500 off if you mention KKHI. Now, we had a chance to sit down and talk with a couple of people who are experts in the field of mental health and children, adolescents, and teenagers. Becky Price was on this show about a year ago. She's the CEO of Ballard Center in Lawrence. I'll be attending their gala a week from today, raising money. They do a lot of great things at Ballard Center. They do food and clothing, which you might expect. They do early education to get the young kids in school and bring them up to speed if they're behind from being at home because of the home they're in. But they also do family services. Family services is largely homes with parents that are abusive or drunk or both. Kids that have mental problems because of the environment they're being raised in. And they intervene with these families and they get them therapy. They get the kids therapy. They get them help. They've seen it. They've seen far too many sexually abused children, neglected children, children that are bullied by their parents. And we know what this leads to. We're not going to talk specifically about Uvalde here because Becky and Kyle Rogenkamp's going to be on with her. He's their family services family stabilization director. So he's an expert in this field. But I wanted to talk with them a little bit about what it is that they do to try to take kids that have warning signs of mental illness and turn them into productive, well-meaning members of our society. I think you'll find it fascinating. Hit it!
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Buck Roofing, online at rbuckroofing.com. Sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head.
Okay, it's time to talk about a wonderful organization in Lawrence that you may be familiar with from a podcast we did, I guess about a year ago it was. Jim Smiley's a patron of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, and he is a persistent sort, and we've gotten to know each other a little bit, and he is frequently sending me texts in my phone of fun places that he's visiting, which is kind of nice. So I guess Jim is traveling around and doing a lot of cool things, but he's very passionate about being a board member at the Ballard Center in Lawrence. The website is ballardcenter.org, And last year we had Becky Price on, the CEO of Ballard Center, and she is joined this time by Kyle Rogenkamp, who's the Development and Family Stabilization Director at BallardCenter.org. Next Friday night, June 3rd, I will be at their Changing Lives Gala at the Jayhawk Club in Lawrence, where they raise a lot of money to help a lot of kids in Lawrence. This has been around since the mid-60s, and it is an amazing organization. And Becky, Kyle, how are you guys today? Very good?
We're great.
Good. Good morning.
Great. Becky, it's great to hear from you again. Let's start with your buddy Jim. Tell me a little bit more about him that I don't know, because I'm going to be having dinner with him next Friday night, and we both laughed before we started recording. He's a persistent sort. I'm guessing your board of directors is filled with a lot of people that are real warriors for Ballard Center.
Absolutely, and Jim is one of our best warriors. Our board is a working board, and one of the things I really try and focus on is at board meetings especially, and at the committee meetings, is reminding them of the important work that Ballard does by telling them a story. And I think that's where the passion comes from. It's easy to get stuck in looking over the numbers and the different projects, building projects going on, and the mundane running of an organization. But it's really important to always bring it back to why we are these board members are volunteering their time. And Jim is one of the best.
Becky, you do so much for thousands of kids in Lawrence, really every year, and tens of thousands over the years with food and clothing. And we're all familiar with a lot of agencies that do things like that. We may all have our personal favorites through our church or through the Ballard Center in Lawrence or whichever organization it may be. But there's so much more. And I know we'll chat with Kyle about this in just a couple of moments, but it is so much more than that. There's family services, early education. How has this grown through the years from just maybe helping families and kids who need food and clothing into so much more?
You know, I think that we, for me personally, I think that instead of just putting a Band-Aid on a challenge, such as educating the child, that it's not really going to help if we don't serve the whole family. Because if kids go home and they don't have heat in their house, or they don't have a house, or they don't have food, they are not going to be able to learn. So we've really gotten good at, especially through the impact of COVID, at helping the entire family and helping them try and become stabilized so that they don't have to use our services any longer. And it varies a lot, but it's been an interesting road, and we've gotten really, really good at finding the resources needed in our community so that we might not be giving them the support, but we connect them directly to the services. We don't hand them a list and say, here, if you need a therapist, try calling this. Here's a list of therapists. If you need a prescription, here's a list of places, and here's how you can do it. We hold their hand while they're trying to walk through the crisis.
Okay, this has never been more important in light of the tragedies we've seen in the past couple of weeks. I think we can all recognize that mental health obviously is a problem with young people who get guns and go on rampages and do things like that. And I'm not in any way suggesting that there's anyone where you are that is, you know, on the cusp of that. We're not going to get in the inner workings of all of the people you work with and what you know at Ballard Center. But I can only imagine between the hundreds of agencies nationwide, organizations like yours, working with families. We know when we see these kids in trouble, when we see terrible tragedies like we saw in Texas this last week, it's always a broken family. There's never a dad in the home. It's not stable. A lot of times there's poverty and mental health crisis where they didn't get some help. I'm guessing, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Becky, that you intervene with a lot of families who have children that are on the cusp of some real trouble, and you get them help. When you talk about therapy and things like that, is that becoming more and more your mission? Do you see more of that than you used to?
It is at least four times the amount, if not more. And it is, when I hear about the tragedies and with the children we work with, but the first thing that pops in my head is, what trauma did that shooter deal with as a child? Because kids don't just, you know, 18-year-olds or whatever age, don't just all of a sudden decide they're going to go on a rampage. And so if we can help the kids and deal with the situations, so much of what we do is navigating, helping families navigate the system. We have attorneys that help, which is a huge need. And we try and take stresses off of the parent's shoulders when we can. A good example is we have a high need is car repairs. So if a parent can't get to work because their car is broken, then they can't put food on the table. So we do serve the whole family. And therapy is one of the most important things, I think, is making sure you're addressing the issue from the start.
Okay, so how do we reach more kids, Becky? You see this every single day, whether it's, you know, sexual abuse or emotional problems with children as they're growing, or families that are divided and breaking up, or could be violent, or alcoholism in the house and things of this nature. How do we reach more of these young people to put them on a good path to become productive citizens, happy people that live a good life? And I ask a big picture question here, because I'm not the person that always just believes, oh, you know, the government can fix this, that they, you know, we just spend money, the government can do it. Would we be better served if we dedicated tax dollars to organizations like yours with an infrastructure and people that are there that have done this to grow an organization like yours and say, look, we need to put some tax dollars into places like the Ballard Center. These people know what they're doing. Or is it something that if you thought nationally the government got involved and tried to do more, could they help in any other way than funding? Could the government do this? Or is this something that needs to be, you know, people doing exactly what you're doing, and more funds would help reach more families?
Hey, Kevin, this is Kyle. You know, you're hitting the nail kind of on the head here. I grew up one of these kids. You know, I grew up facing homelessness. I grew up with abuse, addiction in our household. I spent most of my life with a single mother that had to fight every day to provide for us. And it put me on a path where, you know, I'm very lucky to be where I am today. And a lot of this with families boils down to how easy it can be to feel isolated from the world. Growing up in poverty, it's a grind, Kevin. And there were multiple times in my childhood where I truly felt alone, and I felt like the world didn't care. And I see that in these tragedies across the nation. I see broken young individuals that didn't get some of the opportunities I did to reconnect with a community or with society. I was lucky. I grew up with friends that had amazing fathers that were able to be role models. But at Ballard, it's all about community. We talk about this term, the Ballard family, so often. And when people interact with Ballard, they're a part of that family. Kevin, you're now a part of that family. But more important, our clients are a part of that family. And so much of what we do is tether them back into our community. And now, you know, a place like Ballard, if someone has a view that, you know, tax dollars shouldn't be providing the charity we need to get people stable, Ballard's your place. You know, we don't use tax dollars for our services. We are a mom and pop's local agency that depends on the kindness of our community.
Well, this is a political issue, and we don't need to go there. I am not opposed in any way, when we're watching this stuff taking place across the country, to the government saying we need to fund projects that reach these families and prevent this from happening. I think preventing is the best thing we can do. I'm not so sure what you do to stop something once it's occurring. I think you prevent it in the years leading up to it, and I would have no issue. And it, you know, I'm not a big tax and spend guy, but I have no issue if we dedicate and say, look, we've got to spend whatever money. We just spent $40 billion to Ukraine to help them, for crying out loud. What if we spent $40 billion on teenage mental health in this country and funded whatever number that is, places like Ballard Center and organizations all over the country that are already in place doing work? It's immeasurable what you have saved at this point. We don't know. You can't quantify what didn't happen in somebody's life because the Ballard Center reached them. And this is where we lose sight of everything on this issue. We don't know how many thousands or millions of kids have been reached over the decades by organizations like Ballard Center and organizations like yours. We can't quantify that number, but we know it's a big number. You know that because you work there every day. I'm a common sense guy. I know it. I've seen all kinds of heartache and families and tragedies. We've all seen this. We know they're reaching people like you, Kyle, and your life is turning out to be what it is, and now you're working at Ballard Center and helping other people. We know this works. Wouldn't it be okay if the government did help fund this? Not completely, but why can't they be involved? I don't think it's setting up government agencies and everything the government go out and try and fix this. I think there's organizations in most communities that if they were funded better, could do even more. Does that make any sense?
It absolutely makes sense. I'd love that you get that because sometimes not only are we doing the work and changing the lives, we're not having the support of the government. And it's and in addition, they put barriers in our place to even serve them better. So as I said earlier, you don't want to get me on a rant, but I agree with you 100%. And as you said, the cost of somebody being in juvenile detention center or in jail is so much more for the community that our tax dollars go for. So I think it would be amazing if we could figure out how to have the government help us. And you're right. Instead of the system figuring out how to best serve them, find the organizations that are doing that and help them so that we're not struggling constantly to raise money. Because raising money takes a lot of time and energy.
Yeah.
We fight with that all the time. You know, we're getting ready for this Changing Lives Gala, and that takes time away from us answering the phones and serving the community members that are dealing with the crisis, which is really what we want to do. But we have to step back and we have to raise the money so that we can continue doing it.
I want to reiterate to everyone listening that Ballard Center works on early education for very young kids. They provide food and clothing. They do all these other things. Obviously, the hot topic here is teenagers and what's going on. The numbers are mind-boggling with girls aged 12 to 17. The suicide rate is through the roof in the United States.
Yeah.
And I heard an expert, or so-called expert, I don't know who is an expert and who isn't, I heard them say that with boys, it's different. With girls, the suicide is the big thing. There's obviously male young man suicide as well. But when you become suicidal, the thought is, my life isn't worth living anymore. I'm doing something wrong. I'm not good enough, and I'm taking my own life. And with a lot of adolescent and teenage males, they are now saying, my life isn't worth living, and it's your fault, not mine. And they exact revenge on somebody. They're going to try to harm somebody while harming themselves. I'm not a psychologist. I can't even wrap my head around this. But Kyle, you see this, I'm assuming, a lot with different families through the years. What is your experience with where it is now than maybe a few years ago?
You know, I feel like people are just becoming more and more isolated. I mean, living in the COVID era has taken poverty and put it on steroids for people. I mean, if I felt alone when I was a kid, I can't imagine how kids feel these days. And as a young man going through that, I was angry. I was very angry. And when you're young and you don't know how to cope with the current tragedies you're facing in your own life, you either internalize that like so many young women do, or you project that onto other people and you cause others to feel what you're feeling. And I see that happening right now, and I see it happening more and more. And we do need more help. I mean, we provide access to over $35,000 a month in crisis funding for anything from keeping people from being evicted, keeping their lights on, vehicle repairs to keep them at work. That's about 40 households a month that we're able to keep them going on their journey of reaching stability. But I tell you what, Kevin, there's another 100 households at least each month that we don't get to. And if we were able to have the funding to get the staff, to get the resources together, to touch those other 100 families with our capacity at Ballard, I can only imagine it creating that greater sense of community for these families that are struggling, isolated, feeling alone. You know, we had a board member today call me, and he was at Hy-Vee. And there was a man there that walked 5 hours from the lake, 5 hours to get groceries for his family. And when John talked to him, he said, it feels like no one cares. And John said, I'm a board member at the Ballard Center. We care. You're a part of the Ballard family now. And he immediately called me, and now we're working with this family to try to get them off the streets. But so many times in our daily interactions, we come across households that really can't believe that we care about them because they're so used to feeling alone. And when they realize that we care, that opens the door to deeper conversations to get that entire family in a place where they're feeling healthy, happy, and they feel like they can pursue dreams outside of walking 5 hours just to get groceries.
If folks want
to, we need to be able.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
If folks want to contribute, it's easy to go to ballardcenter.org and you can make a donation. Or I would just encourage anybody listening today, if you are already involved in a group like this, in light of some of the things we've been seeing, it's time to make the call and donate, whether it's through your church or an organization. But ballardcenter.org is awesome, and we support them fully here at KKHI. And Becky and Kyle are both just incredible and doing unbelievable work that I know is heartbreaking work. Becky, when we had you on last year, you got emotional and teared up a little bit, and I'm not taking you down that road today. I think what I want to do, because there's been so much negative news, is ask each of you, I know you can't name names or families or anything like that, can you each share with me something maybe that's happened within the last year that has just warmed your heart completely? Somebody that you've worked with, a story you can share of something that happened with a child or a family that got connected with Ballard Center and you guys really connected with and made a huge difference, and that the outcome or eventually where they are now is just a great feel-good story?
Sure. Yeah. There's so many of them, and it's interesting because we have a tendency to focus on the sad stuff, but there are so many of them, and I truly feel blessed that every day I get to see that. And we need to slow down and remember those good stories. I know that for me, I'll quickly tell one. It amazes me how we have quite a few kids that are in the foster care system at Ballard, and within 3 to 6 months, the difference in them can be just shocking. And because I'm not in the classrooms very much these days, because our kids have not been vaccinated, I have a tendency to not see them for a while. And you can watch a child, come in and you think, oh my goodness, this child is so far behind developmentally and emotionally. And then you can see them with smiles and playing and learning. And that's just one small thing that touches my heart almost daily. Kyle, you...
Kevin, you're going to be able to see one of our families we've supported at the gala share their story. And I don't want to spoil it, but it's a story that involves a grandmother that found out that her granddaughters were being abused. Ended up with broken bones and hair pulled out, and they've been a part of the Ballard family, and the kids have been at the Ballard Center for over a year now. And when you hear her talk at the gala with the growth that their family and these children have made, it really puts it all together, the impact getting aligned with a good organization can do for a family. But there is a story I want to share. This is one of my favorite stories, and Becky's heard me talk about it a lot. Last fall, we came across the family. One of their friends called us and said, this family's too proud to ask for help. So we found them, and it was a grandmother and her daughter and the daughter's one-year-old child, and they were sleeping out at the lake. Now, they had gainful employment. Grandma had a full-time job. She actually works at a nonprofit here in town, which is why she was so ashamed to reach out for help. We found out that she had spent her life savings to buy a trailer, pay it off, and put her family in a position to not have to pay rent each month. They get the trailer, they realize a month in that it's infested with black mold. So their life savings went into a home that they can't live in. She's worked full-time her entire life. She deserves better than to be out at the lake, but they ended up out at the lake. On top of that, her daughter with the one-year-old child was 9 months pregnant. We used our family stabilization network, and the local hotel put them up for 1 week. And in that 1 week, we were able to use their current income and our connections in the community to get them housed in a week's time, all their utilities turned on, and in a position where they didn't need any more help. They had employment. 1 week's time that was able to happen. The day that they moved into their new home is the day that her daughter gave birth to her second grandchild. And they got to bring that baby home to a house.
Wow.
And that's what it's all about. And it's so important for the community, all communities, to not only support agencies like Ballard so that we can make that impact, but also stress to their friends and family, their community, their churches, their social groups, that if anyone is facing hardships like this, reach out to places like Ballard. Because the nightmares I have at night are about the people that don't know about us, and they suffer longer than they need to before we can step in and help.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing both of you next Friday night. It's going to be a wonderful event, the Changing Lives Gala at the Jayhawk Club in Lawrence. It benefits Ballard Center, online at ballardcenter.org. I guess we'll have a few laughs and maybe a few tears. It could be one of those nights, but I know that this is a wonderful event that does a lot of great things for a lot of folks in the Lawrence area. You guys are the best, Becky. It's amazing what you guys do. Kyle, it's a pleasure to speak with you as well. I just wish you both the very, very best, and we're looking forward. I'm bringing Jessica along. She's excited to go to the Jayhawk Club, man. She's still celebrating that national title. So she's just excited that we're going to the Jayhawk Club. So I guess I'll probably try to find some sort of a tie that fits the event or a shirt or something. And we'll
whatever you're comfortable in. And we're going to be selling some behind the bench KE tickets. And we have a really cool photo that we're going to auction off. So bring your checkbook, Kevin.
I would normally try to steal into her purse and take my credit card away from her. But in this case, since it's Ballard Center, I will not. I'll let her do whatever she wants. How's that sound?
All right.
Thank you, guys. All the best to you. And keep up the great work at Ballard Center.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Thank you. There is Becky Price. She's the CEO. And Kyle Rogenkamp, the Development and Family Stabilization Director at Ballard Center. Online at ballardcenter.org. There's no better way to give money than to contribute with an agency that is helping these young people to become productive, happy adults, I guess. You know, raise them to where they could be just productive parts of our society. We're seeing this in all kinds of places, and there's no better place doing more work than Ballard Center since 1960.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.